Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 6th, 2017. The leader of the National Democratic Movement says President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are the main obstacles to peace.
If somebody has been in power now for close to 7 years, then how can you not put the responsibility at their door? He calls himself president. He's supervising over the corruption and falling economy.
And General Paul Malong is banned from traveling to Kenya after his daughter was killed in a fire in Nairobi.
I talked to President, and President promised me that he will let me go. But also, I'm getting information that some people are still struggling, trying to intervene and to convince him.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of the National Democratic Movement says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are the main obstacles to democracy in South Sudan. Lamakol says Mr. Kiir and Machar have been against an idea of a transitional government of technocrats to usher peace in South Sudan. The former Minister of Agriculture is also blaming the East African Regional Bloc, IGAD, for supporting President Kiir during the South Sudan's crisis.
If you follow what has happened in South Sudan since 2005, the SPLM has been in charge, and it has been Salva Kiir and Riek Machar for 8 years together. They only differed in 2013. And since that time, there has never been any signs of development in the country. On the contrary, there were humanitarian crises, insecurity, falling economy, and all that. So in addition, there has never been any space for expression of any other point of view.
You are passing the blame on President Kiir and Riek Machar. Someone will say, who is to provide leadership at this point now if all of you are blaming each other? Because President Kiir will say you also ran away from the country and left him alone.
It's not a question of blame, it's a question of responsibility. If somebody has been in power now for close to 7 years, another has been with him for close to six, then how can you not put the responsibility at their door? He calls himself president. He's supervising over the corruption and falling economy. So where does the blame come from? It is either you run the country properly or you step aside.
But there were voices who have been saying that the government should be handed over to technocrats, and then politicians should all go home and do their homework and see what is the way forward. And the idea disappeared in a thin air. You were a part of the discussion.
It didn't disappear. Who is saying that it disappeared in thin air? It didn't. You know, when we proposed it first in 2014 in Addis Ababa, it was poo-pooed by many people. You cannot remove a legitimate government. But the legitimacy of the government now in Juba is open, you know, to question. Everybody knows it is not a legitimate government. Their mandate stems only from the peace agreement that they have unceremoniously, you know, abrogated. And the idea of technocratic government now has picked up. It was not, by then it was the National Alliance that were talking about it. Today, even some sections of the SPLM are supporting it. So it is snowballing. It is not disappearing, contrary to what you are saying.
Dr. Lam, since you left Juba, since you formed the National Democratic Movement, we've not heard a lot about your activities. What are you up to?
We have been very clear regarding how to resolve the issue of war in South Sudan. We have been clear of what went wrong. We have been clear of how we can approach it. We have also been clear how you can unify the ranks of the opposition. So I don't know if, unless you want to hear something else, I'm sure you must have been hearing this. And this is why we are talking today.
What is your take on the national dialogue that is going on in the country? The team from the co-chair went to Khartoum and met you. What is your take on that?
It didn't meet me. It was a farce anyway. The national dialogue is a farce. It is a gimmick. It is not meant to produce anything. The national dialogue is a propaganda tool by Salva Kiir to portray himself as somebody who is looking for peace, when in reality he's the one who abrogated the peace agreement. In reality, he's the one who ignited the war again. In reality, he's the one who had driven the people outside the country. Remember the other day he says, oh, these people were driven away by some journalists who went and spoke. Imagine being so insensitive. So that national dialogue would never lead to anything.
I would put this question to you on behalf of the South Sudanese people who are listening to us right now. If you say the national dialogue is what you are calling gimmick, and if the peace agreement is not being implemented, as you said, it has been abrogated by the government, then what is the future of South Sudan? And there is no end to the suffering of the people. Where are we going?
We are going to the abyss if we continue to be led by the clique in Juba, because they are not sensitive to the feelings of the South Sudanese. They are not sensitive to their needs. They are just sitting there, you know, to serve their parochial interests. We have been very clear as to way forward. We have been saying the only way to get out of this logjam is to have a round table conference where you have all the stakeholders to discuss how to stop the war and bring about sustainable peace. It is the government in Juba that has been against this. They want us to believe that the peace agreement is still on, when everybody knows that it is dead.
JMAC is representing IGAD in Juba as the referee, monitoring the implementation of the agreement. Why would you say there's no agreement?
I met with the chairman of JMAC, and I told him very frankly that he has no agreement to evaluate, and he has no agreement to monitor. It is up to him to stay in Juba as long as his bosses in Addis Ababa tell him to do so. But that does not mean that there is an agreement on the table.
That's Lama Kol, leader of the National Democratic Movement. He was speaking to me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, earlier today. General Paul Malong, the former head of South Sudan's army, says he is yet to identify the body of his 16-year-old daughter, who was reportedly killed in a fire that swept through a boarding school in Nairobi last weekend. Malong says his plans to bury his daughter's body at his farm in South Sudan has been put on hold because President Kiir will not allow him to travel to the neighboring country.
I learned that he had an accident in that fire event, and she has been to beyond recognition. This is what I'm getting from relatives and my family in Nairobi.
There are reports that you have been prohibited from going to identify your daughter. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. I talked to President, and President promised me that he will let me go. But also, I'm getting information that some people are still struggling, trying to intervene and to convince him.
What is the reason that you have been given for the house arrest?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, because when you talk of something, it's something that have been declared. I don't have any charges. I'm not being accused of anything. I'm not told that you have committed this. And until it will be disclosed, of course, why I'm being put under arrest. It will come out.
How do you feel about these circumstances?
Well, in fact, you see, this is my nation. The country is mine. The people are my people. And I thought that if I'm told by authority, you just stay here for today and tomorrow, you will be told, why are you here? I should not be in a hurry to say why and why. I'm convinced if I'm told to stay here, I will be told that we put you because of Y and X.
How long have you been under house arrest?
I'm going for almost 4 months. 4 months now.
And in the span of 4 months, the government has not told you why you are under house arrest?
No, I'm not being told.
as a former government official, do you not feel like you at least should know why you were under house arrest? Do you not feel like the government that you worked for owes you an explanation?
As I told you before, I don't want to rush. I don't want to rush why I'm under house arrest. But I believe they will tell me why I'm being placed under house arrest. I will be told. If I'm not told, there will be a time that I will call and say and ask why I'm being placed under this house arrest. But I feel that I did not decide to sue because I was a national property. I was a national property, but after I was released, I become at least a family property. I become a family property, and if I want to decide, I will talk to my family. We will just sit, we will just discuss, and how we will come out.
How did you come to learn that your daughter had died in the fire, and how did you react to the news?
The first information I got it from my daughter. She came out and she said she was the one who awoke me. And she told me that the building had caught the fire. And she said, I have run, and I was calling her, and she was saying that I'm not seeing you. And she thinks that she might have come out of her own, and she might have been injured or something like that. She might have been taken to hospital. Until today, that young girl is not being informed that you have lost your sister. Your sister has died, in that she is not being informed. People are waiting for me to go and tell her.
So the authorities will not confirm whether or not it's your daughter until you yourself identify her. Is that what I just heard you say?
Yes, exactly.
What is the name of your late daughter?
It's Alakir. She's called Alakir.
And how old was Alakir?
Alakir, she's 16 years old.
What do you want people to remember about Alakir?
What I need is just to go and bury her in my farm. Already, I have located in my farm. I have a farm almost of 16 acres that I have planted trees, fruit trees, and I have left a certain space as for us when we leave the well. I will be buried there. Already, we have buried one of my sons who also died in school. It's called Mwang. We have buried him there, and we were looking to have a body of Alakir to be taken to that farm, and this is where she will be buried.
That was General Paul Malong speaking to Ayen Bior earlier today from his house in Juba. A South Sudanese lawyer is not letting up on his quest for justice in his country. Wani Santino Jada has filed another petition in the East African Court of Appeals in Arusha, questioning the recent election of some South Sudanese lawmakers to represent their country in the East Africa Legislative Assembly. Santino says the elections does not conform with the East Africa Community Treaty. He says the SPLM-IO is not a registered party in South Sudan, and there is no law that allows rebels to be elected in the East Africa Legislative Assembly.
I think you are aware that some of the members of the parliament were declared unopposed, and the law says they are supposed to be elected. This is what the law says, the treaty and the election act. There's supposed to be election, and these people have to be elected into the parliament. So it has no difference with the former nominees, like what the president did at the first through presidential degree. This has no difference with the degree. At the first, president made degree, and we went to court, and through an injunction, they were stopped from being sworn in. And now the parliament is now declaring that they have gone and opposed, and the law is silent about that. So it has no difference from the nomination.
People in Juba could be wondering, why have you taken upon yourself to fight the government in the court of laws, and for that matter, outside the country?
It's our duty as lawyers to ensure that there's a rule of law, to protect the constitution, to protect the treaty. So we wanted to see that there's a rule of law in the country. That's why I decided to file this petition for the good of our people, for the good of our generations and generations just unborn, because the government is always violating the constitution, is always violating the treaty.
Your case is against those who were elected and opposed, and there were only two candidates who were elected and opposed. Two women were elected and opposed. So you are
there
not
were
happy.
There were three. There were three women that were declared and opposed by the Speaker of the Parliament. We are taking the matter to court. And then when you see also the IOs, which is a rebel movement, there's no provision that says rebels can become a member of parliament. So East African community, we are also attaching that one into our petition.
Which rebels are you talking about here?
The SPLA IOs, which they represented in the government.
Talking about rule of law in the country, what is your take on the decision to dismiss the judges who went on strike? Is that constitution? Is there anything in the constitution that the president has powers to dismiss judges?
The dismissal of the judges by the president was unprocedural, and it is unconstitutional. Under the constitution, when you see Article 101, Clause C, it says the president is having powers to appoint judges. But once the judiciary has been established or constituted, the hands of the president is tied. The president has no authority to dismiss any judges, any judge or justices. There are some procedures to be followed. We have the Judicial Service Commission. The grounds for dismissal of judges, it has to be through the Judicial Service Commission. When the judge is incompetent, this is one of the grounds. And then maybe it's a lunatic or he gets involved in corruption. And then it has to be through an approval of the Judicial Service Commission. It has to be with approval of two-thirds of the Judicial Service Commission, not only even the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice is not having powers to dismiss any of the judge or justices. So the procedure made by the president is a very wrong procedure. It brings constitutional crisis in our country. It affects the rule of law in our country.
Let's look at some of the decisions in the country here. You know, the National Communication Commission in South Sudan blocked some websites, the Sudan Tribune, the Radio Tamazuj, and then some other bloggers. Is there provisions in the constitution that gives the commission or the country to block certain websites?
You know, under the Constitution of South Sudan Bill of Rights, there's freedom of information, right to access information. And then even South Sudan is part of East African community. There's one of the pillars that says a member state has to adhere to the principle of human rights, in which South Sudan is supposed to respect it, is obliged to do it. And then the African Charter also talks about it echoed the issue of human rights there. So the blocking of the websites by the government is one of the violations also of the constitution, in which says every citizen is having right to information. The Ministry of Information is not having authority to block any website in the country. Even the parliament itself has no authority to block any website in the country. Even the president himself has no authority to block the website. Even the Security Council has no authority to order for any website to be developed, this one to be blocked, because right to information is part of natural right. One is born with that right automatically.
That was South Sudanese lawyer Wani Santino Jada. He was speaking to me from Arusha, Tanzania, earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the artwork of South Sudanese artists that is going viral.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could work in any profession, what would you choose?
I will choose to be a business lady, simply because it will make me to help the needy.
I'll choose the medical field because I feel it's an opportunity to help save lives.
I love marketing. I would want to master in the marketing field because I love to engage people. It will give me the opportunity to interact more.
I will choose law because there are a lot of crime committed in our country, and the people who commit the crime are just free. They are going without brought to book, or they are brought to justice.
definitely something in policy, because I think that stuff like that is really important in helping people and communities move forward.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. As Uganda continues to welcome South Sudanese refugees, there are fears the influx might drive the country into confining refugees to camps rather than the current settlement. Catherine Nambi has more on the story from Kampala.
Uganda is currently home to over 1 million South Sudanese refugees, but many more are expected since Uganda is not about to close its borders. According to Uganda's progressive refugee policy, each refugee is entitled to a piece of land in designated refugee settlements. This land is provided by communities because the government has no land of its own to settle the refugees. Idro Dominic Tako is a district speaker in Adjumani, one of the South Sudan refugee host districts.
We are very glad to our community for offering this land. And the land offered to the refugees is at no cost. And we think this is a gift of nature. In the spirit of humanism, we need to say I.
Ninya Hassan Saidi is the chairperson of Koboko, another district hosting South Sudan refugees. He says the leaders take it upon themselves to mobilize the communities to offer the land.
The land we are mobilizing belongs to the community. It's not like other places where it is owned by government. This land is owned by the owners, the community. And the task of mobilizing it are we local leaders. We must go and convince them. If we don't go on the ground and convince these people to give land, sometimes they don't give land.
On this land, refugees are free to farm and conduct other money-generating ventures. However, with the refugee numbers increasing, the amount of available land is dwindling. As a result, Uganda's government is reducing the plots from 100 by 100 meters to 30 by 30 meters. Hilary Onek is Uganda's minister for refugees. He says without international support, Uganda is likely to fail in its obligation of providing land to the refugees.
The refugees who came earlier could have been given 1, 2, or 3 acres of land to occupy as a family. But today, as the number increases, we reduce the space because we have no option except giving them the size that we can afford. So we still struggle. That's why we are calling for support from other international agencies, including other countries.
Titus Jogo is a refugee desk officer in Uganda's Office of the Prime Minister. He says without complementary funding, Uganda might have no option but to put refugees in camps as opposed to settlements. But camps are more expensive as far as providing basic needs is concerned.
If the numbers continue coming and run out of more land to settle these refugees, what might happen when any other small areas that have been given to us are full? What would happen? It is something worth it for us to sit on the drawing board and say, what are we likely to do? Is it the policy that is likely to change? That instead of putting people in refugee settlements, we do camping? I fear that we may go the Kenya way of camping these refugees.
Jogo explains the difference between refugee camps and settlements.
Camps are in Kenya, that refugees are put in such an area, and there is a fence all around with only one gate, which is managed by police. Refugees have no freedom of movement. You just move out of that camp on permission. But when it comes to Uganda, ours are refugee settlements, that you are given land where you stay. You can have your own house. You have some land for agriculture where you do backyard gardening. Movement, you don't need to get permission. And it has very negative side effects. For example, you provide each and everything, including firewood.
The majority of South Sudanese refugees are spread across settlements in northern Uganda, including Bidibidi in Nyumbe district, Rhino and Mvepi in Arua district, and Palabek, Lamo district. Still others are in Pagilinya, Ailo, and Mungla settlements in Adjumani district. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The artwork of a South Sudanese cartoonist is inspiring people across the United States to speak out against racism and police brutality. As INBO reports, although the cartoon was triggered by the protest of an American football player, the work was inspired by an iconic image from the 1968 Olympics.
Sudanese cartoonist Khalid El-Bey had never heard of National Football League quarterback Colin Kaepernick before he visited the United States last September. In fact, El-Bey has never followed the NFL. Hard-hitting American football is barely known in Central Africa. But he became inspired by Kaepernick's refusal to stand for the national anthem to protest racial injustice and police brutality in the U.S. El-Bey says when he first saw the image of Kaepernick kneeling, it reminded him of the 1968 Olympics, when American track stars John Carlos and Tommy Smith raised black-gloved fist on the medal stand.
So for me, this is the black fist of our century, of our generation.
With that image in mind, El-Bey pulled out pen and paper and began to sketch Kaepernick kneeling, drawing the athlete's huge afro in the shape of a fist.
For me, the black fist manifests the struggle of African Americans and of course, you know, civil rights as a whole.
A friend was so moved by the image that he encouraged El-Bey to have it printed on T-shirts to bring attention to the cause. American entertainers Chance the Rapper and Common, along with a handful of other celebrities, have been seen wearing the T-shirt, which has since gone viral. In Sports Illustrated magazine last month, writer Michael Rosenberg argued Kaepernick has become a symbol, just like running back Ray Rice, whose NFL career effectively ended after he was caught on camera punching out his fiancée at a casino. Rosenberg said NFL teams will, quote, gladly take five men who act and think like Colin Kaepernick before signing Kaepernick himself, just as they often take players who commit domestic violence but want nothing to do with Rice, end quote. El-Bey, who lives in Doha, Qatar, was inspired by Kaepernick while on a fellowship last fall at Maine's Colby College, where he taught human rights. While in the U.S., El-Bey visited the Malcolm X Memorial in New York and the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, where civil rights icon Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968. The idea of a Romanian-born Sudanese cartoonist living in Doha, immersing himself in the Kaepernick controversy, does not strike El-Bey as odd.
We in this part of the world, in the Arab world or in Africa, we heard about the struggle. We saw the struggle. Malcolm X came to Sudan. Muhammad Ali came to Sudan. So I grew up seeing that, you know, seeing the black fist. And, of course, during the 90s, hip-hop, we grew up with hip-hop, and it was all the same thing. Mos Def, Talib Kweli, and Afrika Bambaataa, all of this always had the black fist in it. And this, it became such a powerful icon.
Athletes like Ali, Carlos, Smith, and now Kaepernick have all been demonized for using their platform to push their ideas, according to El-Bey.
All these athletes, whether it's the athletes from the Olympics in 1968 or whether it's Muhammad Ali, all of them got devilized when they took that decision. But later on, they became a turning point in history, not only African-American history, but in American history and world history, because this is a turning point right now. What Kaepernick is doing, standing up or actually kneeling down in protest of all these things that need to be fixed.
Kaepernick remains unsigned this season, which is scheduled to begin on Thursday. Many have accused NFL teams of not signing the quarterback because of his sideline protest. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington. CJ Uman.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Junubia by CJ Oman. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for inviting us into your homes and vehicles. Let us know what you think about our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.